You are listening to Equity Equals on the Michigan Business Network. Equity Equals promotes nonprofit businesses and social entrepreneurs that impact Michigan's double bottom line. The host is Angela Austin.
Thank you for joining us for the Promise and Praxis of Racial Healing panel at James Madison College.
He said, I will not accept a full professorship here until you appoint women, either say black women, women, black and white women, into the tenure system.
Right.
So he was really rebelling, and he knew a lot about race and race discrimination. And I have some thoughts about his book, which I use. Differences in race relations. Derek's comment, there will never be racial healing in America. I'm 83 years of age, and I've seen a lot. I was born November 23rd, 1933. On Northern High School, undergrad, San Francisco State College. I came here and did my PhD, finished that in November 23rd, 1960. So I've seen a lot, traveled a lot. I was the first black yellow cab driver in San Francisco. That's not on my resume. I was a prison guard. That was after the NAACP boycott in San Francisco. You know, San Francisco has a reputation of being a very liberal city. I can tell you a lot about that, racial healing. But I want to say this, with all the experiences that I've had in my 83 years, and a great part of it right here on the campus of Michigan State University, when black students could not go across the street, across Grand River, and rent a room. Black faculty could not buy a home. I was the first black, I hate to say that, but I was the first black homeowner in East Lansing, Michigan. That was after taking on realtors in this town with the support of students, the campus NAACP, with the support of students on this campus. So I've seen a lot. I used to always say that I will never live to see, and I would love it, but I'll never live to see an African-American president of the United States. I said that. I would have bet my last dollar that I would have been put in the grave without seeing, and I've heard many, many glad to say that. You can be aspire to anything, but forget it. We'll never have an African American. It happened. So I'm always cautious about saying something will never happen. And part of that, my belief system, comes from the work and diligent work of Martin Luther King Jr. I met him first in 1955 when he gave the major address. And I won't take more, if I can go more than another 7 minutes.
Yeah.
We got a whole panel there.
Right.
In San Francisco, he gave the keynote address at the 1955 national meeting of the NAACP in San Francisco. Dramatic address. And I had followed him along the way. Even while here at Michigan State, I used to send $2, $3, $4, and $5 bills, a $5 bill down to SCLC to fight the struggle in the South. Because I became aware of the struggle in the South from my dad, from my father. And we'll talk about that real briefly. My father was, in some ways, there were four boys and four girls in our family, nine of us. My dad was a very cautious man. He used to always warn us, boys, do the right thing, stay out of trouble, stay away from white folk, especially white men, or you get in trouble. That's the kind of quiet, cautious upbringing that I got from my father. My mother was a little more militant, a little more outspoken. And I used to always wonder why my dad was such a cautious man, such a fearful man. And it came full circle, and I express that in my book here, when I talk about the remarkable contribution that Martin Luther King Jr. made first to the black community and then expanded to Hispanic community, other community, and to women in our society. Fear. Martin Luther King Jr. used to say this many times. Black people, I would listen to him preach in these little small towns in Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas. He would say, black people, you are never, we were Negroes then, Negroes, you will never be free until you overcome your fear of death. And he used to preach about that all the time, about death. And you've heard this before, Curtis. You'll never be free. And then I started thinking about my dad being a fearful man. So one day, I was probably 45 years of age. I was a dean here at Michigan State. And I went down to Detroit and I took my dad shopping out in J.L. Hudson. Do y'all remember that store? And bought him a top coat. Then I brought him back home to Detroit to the house, family house. And I said, Dad, tell me something that you never shared with anyone else, because I was taking notes on the family, and all of you should take notes on your families too, so you can write your books later on. Tell me something that you never shared with anyone else. He said, oh boy, I don't know anything. I don't know. I said, Dad, wait a minute. I bought you a top coat. It was in January. And I said, you got to pay for that top coat. And the only way you're going to pay for it, you got to tell me something that you never shared with anyone else. I pushed my father, Professor Biggs, I pushed him for about 45 minutes, Trey, before he would tell me what he told me. He said, okay, all right, I'll tell you something. He said, when I was 14 years of age, I saw my best friend hung from a tree in Jones County, Georgia, Haddock Station. I was in the woods watching.
We'll be back with more of the Promise and Praxis of Racial Healing panel at James Madison College.
You are listening to Equity Equals on the Michigan Business Network. Equity Equals promotes nonprofit businesses and social entrepreneurs that impact Michigan's double bottom line. You even thought to ask, who's bad?